That's white people, UCSC students, people who came down in Porsches and Mercedes. Those characterizations are all generalities, of course. Moot point to some degree. It makes very little difference who is selling and who is buying if the sellers are being thrown in jail regularly, or CYA if they're below 18, and the buyers are stealing to support the habit and dropping fairly regularly of overdoses. It's not a color issue. It's a human tragedy.
Mm-hmm. As you, I've read you this whole Don Lane letter, finally skipping toward the end of it, what do you think of his claim that it's important to note that neither Hernandez nor Kennedy went public with the allegations, did not label Bear the other Beach Flats landlords as racists, but asked the DA to look into this potentially illegal act, and it was you,
Well, there are two inaccuracies, two inaccuracies in that one. First, they quietly and responsibly ask the DA to look in. Since we're in a series, where does it say that somebody called them with this allegation?
They
reporting a troubling and credible allegation of racial discrimination. Who received up in the top of it, from a Beach Flats landlord, the two council members who received phone calls from a Beach Flats landlord saying that Phil Bear and other Beach Flats landlords had met to discuss discrimination against Latinos in filling their rental units. They didn't receive any telephone call from any Beach Flats landlord saying that Phil Bear and other Beach Flats landlords had met to discuss discrimination against Latinos in filling their rental units. Nobody called them. Nobody made that allegation. They invented it. And then the accusation that I gave the story to the media is equally untrue. As I understand it, the person who gave the story to the media was the person whose name they used as the complainantee in the report that they made to the DA's office.
And who was that? Martinez?
Yes.
A man named Martinez?
I don't think he minds having his name mentioned in this context, and I must say that I commend him for his integrity and his courage in not rolling over on us in this way that he was obviously expected by these two city council members to do. They used his name as the complainantee. He repeatedly said that he never made any such complaint, and he called the media, as I understand it, outraged and disgusted by the way in which these two council members and the city attorney, I might add, had attempted to tie him to an accusation that he never made.
So in other words, the city attorney contacted him to try to get him to...
No, the city attorney never spoke with him at all. The district attorney called him to determine if the allegation, if he had in fact made the allegation, at which time he quite instantly and without any sort of ambivalence at all denied ever having made any such allegation, at which time or shortly thereafter the so-called investigation was halted because nobody was complaining except two city council members, and apparently, quite incorrectly, as I understand the appropriate range of authority for the city attorney. City attorney in this context should have had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Hmm. So your contention is that the two city council members were the ones who complained to the DA, and that Mr. Martinez never called the DA?
Yes.
and that the only reason that they heard about this was because it happened, because Hernandez and Kennedy called Danner's office.
Yes, went to Danner's office, as I understand it,
and
with the city attorney, Barisoni.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting to me, whatever the veracity of any of this one way or the other, and I frankly tend to believe you, but I'm biased, is that it tends to draw attention away from the more important issue that will affect
right.
the entire city, which is the Beach Flats redevelopment, Third Street realignments.
Well, that's its purpose, I'm persuaded.
The Seaside Company sellout, as I call it.
Exactly, and that, I'm sure, is the underlying motive. They know that, I don't know, I'm still not quite clear as to my legal remedies in this situation, but...
seems like Martinez is the man with the remedies, although you do too. I mean, he's... If Martinez is falsely being... Kennedy is, and Hernandez are claiming that he... You know, he...
Filed a complaint that he did not file.
Right, his reputation...
Made an accusation that he did not make.
They're calling him a liar. And if that injures his reputation, then he has a slander suit, and if they wrote it down, a libel suit. Although I don't know, maybe they have some kind of immunity as council members. I'm not clear on that.
I'm a little fuzzy on that one, too. They seem to enjoy a certain amount of protection by virtue of being fearless leaders.
Let me kind of remove myself from the swamp briefly and ask you, regarding the deeper swamp of the Beach Flats brouhaha,
mm-hmm.
what's coming up around that? Any update?
Well, supposedly, I think there's a tentative date for the possible release of a final EIR in mid-September, though that's very tentative. You know, the Terrace Point people, I guess, have been given about 6 or 8 dates when their EIR was supposed to be released, and it keeps getting postponed, and that could well happen. In this case, we certainly feel that they cannot possibly correct the numerous flaws in their DEIR that quickly. And are presuming that they won't even attempt to, that they'll simply bring it back in this fundamentally flawed form and leave us with little recourse except to challenge them legally, which I'm growingly confident that we can and will do. We have a movement that is really very exciting. We're meeting every Monday at 7 o'clock in the Sierra Club office at 1001 Center Street next to India Joe's. We're packing the place and probably about to outgrow it. New recruits every week, a number of a very intelligent, capable people joining the fray here. And I'm convinced that this is really the line in the sand where the whole megalomania, pro-development, roll over the public form of city government that's evolved in the last several years is really going to be confronted head on and hopefully turned back.
Do you know if any Beach Flats redevelopment opponents are going to be running for city council?
Oh, I hear that Timothy Fitzmaurice took our papers. He's an excellent man, very profound intellect, really.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly support him quite enthusiastically.
What about the infamous Phil Baer, perennial council candidate?
No, I don't want to do that. I prefer somebody younger, frankly.
Just over the hill, I feel.
Yes, I'm a little disenchanted with us middle-aged, disillusioned, recycled, would-be Sam Farrs who haven't managed to make a career out of it and haven't managed to create a legacy out of it. And
maybe you're saving yourself for the slander suit.
Yes, I'm anticipating having to involve myself in a lawsuit or two here. The EIR is a process that is essentially advisory in nature and not legally binding. They are not in any obligation to provide a reasonable, truthful EIR.
That's the environmental impact report that is the response to the many, many, what, over 200 questions that were presented?
Over 200 individuals, over 800 pages of questions and responses, including...
Concern with the environmental impact of the proposed redevelopment.
Responses from something like half a dozen lawyers and a number of qualified experts in the various fields of marine biology and air quality and traffic studies, a very impressive public response that just caught him flagrantly failing to identify the impacts of this thing.
Phil, can you give us a phone number that folks can call if they want to volunteer to get more information or help out?
The only one that I can we have several that we're giving out, but the only one I can remember right now is 423-0170.
That's the one I dialed to get you.
Yes. How did it work?
Seemingly, I got what I bargained for.
Yeah, okay.
I want to thank you, Phil. I'm going to continue with the remaining 16 minutes of the show, invite you to tune in, and invite listeners who want to help the Beach Flats Redevelopment Group raise these significant issues and fight the redevelopment of the Beach Flats.
Okay, I'll definitely turn in. Hey, would you get the hamsters that run in your wheel that power your station to run a little faster? Your signal's a little weak down here.
I will try to kick their butts.
Yeah, give them a carrot or something.
Thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I hope your listeners will jump in on this. It's really very exciting and very important.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Bob.
We're going to crank up those hamsters here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That was community activist and increasingly notorious public figure, Phil Baer, attacked by council members Hernandez and Kennedy recently, who were themselves attacked in return at the last city council meeting in a brouhaha around issues of racism. More on that, or perhaps less on that, later. Who knows? Do give us a call now, however, if you wish to jump into any of this discussion about this, that, or the next thing. We're at 423-5361, 423-5361. Let's take another one of our little breaks and listen to the beautiful Carol Denny, the voice of reason and passion.
Would think it was something.
Of Carol Denny from Failure to Disperse. Get her album by giving us a call at 423-HUFF and we will alert you to the proper address. With the last few minutes of the show, unless we get some incoming calls, and if we do, we're happy to turn to you out there in the radio audience, we're going to return to the last city council meeting to play some of the highlights. We actually have lots of city council tape. In fact, you know, it might be best if we could actually sneak in a live interview. We have in the studio with us Citizens Committee for the Homeless board member. I'm not quite sure if she's still a board member or not. I think she is. I don't think she's been officially dumped. Video journalist, street spirit writer, and I should say Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides producer, Becky Johnson. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert.
And Becky, I've been trying to get out of you a kind of an update on this community house project, which I have been trashing for years. You, of course, have been somewhat more upbeat about the project. But I know that at the last council meeting, the largest single appropriation, with the exception of legal aid, actually it was the largest appropriation until legal aid was restored, was the appropriation for community house, on which literally millions has been lavished to essentially set up these trailers for 30 to 40 people to have what I call a Cadillac program on the graveyard of the campground. We've been through this one along a number of times. This community house project is now opened, and I guess you were not only on the board that oversaw this, but you're also doing some kind of video for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the same group that is now unceremoniously dumping you at the initiative of homeless community resource queen Karen Gillette.
Well, community house is a reality now, Robert, and as a lot of the controversies regarding whether this was the proper use of scarce public funds for homeless services, all of those battles have been waged, and right or wrong, community house is in our community, and we need to make the best of it, and it is housing for 40 individuals, and I was there actually today, Robert, visiting the site. They anticipated having 23 people there by the end of today. And one thing that's, I think you had described this as a Cadillac program for homeless people, and let me tell you, it is. It's very, very nice. One thing that's very unique about this is that each person who's in the program has their own room. They have a key to that room. They can lock it when they leave. And there's really no other program in the nation that has that. Along with that, it also has a series of rules that are not the same as one would have in their home.
Two comments here, Becky. Yeah, not only can they lock it, they themselves get locked in. These are adults who have an 11 o'clock curfew, who are not allowed to have sex, who, if they have a beer downtown, can be expelled from the program, who are essentially in this new posture of the babysitting child care mode. This is the theory that homeless people are homeless because they are somehow defective. You know, they are drug addicts, they are bums, they are drunks, they have these individual problems that don't have too much to do with lack of available housing or lack of jobs or flight of capital to foreign countries. Let me make my statement first, Peggy. I'll be happy to return the mic to you in a moment.
How many clients I can right. answer?
No. I'm just giving you my spiel here. Same spiel I gave the city council, actually. And this community house project was a huge investment of money in a small number of people, which doesn't, you said low-income housing. I don't think this provides housing, really, for anybody. It's a month-to-month housing program, which is supposedly a transitional program. It's not the kind of housing that was envisaged by Paige Smith, whose name adorns this program, the Paige Smith Community House, one of the founders of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, who really was concerned about homeless people. He had a lot of failings. He was a patriarch. But he wrote against the sleeping ban, the camping ban, which this current CCH is refusing to take a position on. He wanted real low-income housing for people. What he got and what we have is this case-managed program costing millions of dollars, which people can enter not as low-income housing, but in essence as a kind of a halfway house jail situation. What do you say to that?
That was 3 points more than the three-point limit. Well, you made 6 points. I can only I'm sorry, my memory bank only has positions for 3 points in a row. So some of those will slip through, and I apologize to our free radio listeners for this shoddy torrent from our host. But you can get in the door at Community House for $50 is the absolute bare minimum, and the budget won't allow for many to do that.
30 or 40 are going to get
I don't know.
I'm serious. Is that a realistic statement? Are you talking about the one or two people they're going to choose to show that they will let one person in who can pay?
Wait a minute. Now you're throwing a seventh point in here. I haven't answered your last six.
You're not going to have time unless you start moving.
Let's just talk about the recent $50,000, because I think it's kind of an interesting story about that.
$100,000.
I'm just talking about the $50,000 was handed over on this last Tuesday at City Council. And having watched very closely what happened with City Council in June,
over $100,000.
It's not your turn, and I have the mic.
I'm sorry, it was $100,000. I was reading the agenda very carefully.
Oh, okay.
$42,000
okay.
for security, but it was $100,000 total price.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you're more on top of it than I, but I'm not on the board anymore. So the $50,000 that I knew about, when we were attending the City Council meetings in June, and this was before the doors had opened to Community House, everything in place, staff had been hired, final details were being worked out, all of a sudden, out of the blue, Cynthia Matthews and Scott Kennedy threw up that CCH had to show that that they didn't have the money in their budget for an executive director, that they didn't have sufficient security for the site, and that arrangements were going to have to be made, and that the doors were not going to open until those things had been taken care of. This was at the time when the merger was not complete yet, and as such, there was I believe, you know, having been on that board, that there was a lot of pressure for Citizens Committee for the Homeless to merge with HCRC, and indeed Scott Kennedy said that openly at the City Council meeting, that you know, why hadn't it happened yet, and that he had expected the merger to be completed before Community House opened, and which, of course, was an impossibility from the start. He's sort of inventing that. But all this latest handout of money sort of solved those problems.
Well,
miraculously.
I think it was clear, and we've talked about this in earlier shows, that Karen Gillette did this miraculous resignation and then suddenly resurrection number, in which she first refused to be the executive director, even after both these boards had decided that they wanted to vote her on, unless she could veto and eliminate people like yourself, Becky, and the only formerly ex-homeless person, Laura Tucker, from the CCH board. And this was allowed, and the reason, and the muscle behind this was this call for a security and an executive director by Kennedy and Matthews. It was a thinly disguised ploy by the city council to pressure both boards into merging, and particularly your board, into dumping you. Of course, my concern, and what I wanted to find out from you, was whether it was true that Catherine Byers took a dive for this. I have publicly accused her of doing this. It's my understanding that that's exactly what she did. That even though your board didn't quite go for all this and said, well, we will cut down our board size, but we will not allow the other board to veto our members, they arranged it so that the board size was cut at the very point where you would be cut off. Is that true? Did Byers, who was on the negotiating team for the merger, speak for this? What was her position? Did she take the dive? Did she do this, this bend over for Karen Gillette number?
Well, the board was, one of the earlier salvos was that there'd be 9 members of CCH that would go to the new merge. And then they, our negotiators came in, and there were 7 when everything was done.
And the 7, of course, cut you out, right?
Me and Laura Tucker
as
well. And
the negotiators were led by Catherine Byers.
Catherine Byers, Peg Smith, and I think Diane Lowe. Having spoke to a former staff person who was in a position to know, my being cut from the board all came from HCRC. There was a major lobbying from their board, and there was no one on CCH that wanted myself or Laura Tucker to be cut. How it came about, I don't know.
Well, they may not have wanted it, but they apparently didn't want you on the board enough to insist that the board be kept at 8 or 9, which would have kept you on. So it's all very well to say the pressure came from the other board. In fact, however...
But I wanted to talk about the sex. Point number two back.
Yes.
I looked at the rules. It doesn't say that sex is outlawed at Community House. You can jack off to your heart's content with your door locked.
I see.
You can't have anyone in the room with you, any guest that you might feel like having sex with.
It's safe sex. It's safe sex.
And anyone visiting must keep their clothes on all the time. So you can have all the sex you want by yourself in your room, with your clothes on, I guess.
So you're telling me that this multi-million-dollar program for 30 homeless people, which is being funded with hundreds of thousand dollars of city money on the bones of a campground that served 4 to 5 times as many.
Yeah, you can have sex, but by yourself.
Tells adults that they have to keep their clothes on when they're in their own low-income housing. Is that right?
It's one of the rules. Yeah, I don't know if it's a major violation or a minor violation. I'll get back to you on that.
Obviously, they're treating people like minors, but they've brought in the military, so it sounds like majors. It's a little confusing to me. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And it looks like we're running into Uncle Dennis's time. Uncle Dennis, where are you? Actually, I'm very pleased to have extra showtime here on Bathrob Spears Broadsides because I have enough tapes to keep on going until 5 in the morning. So, hey, watch me run. What have I got for you now? Well, we were considering... too late. I'm afraid that my time has run out, as we say. Uncle Dennis has arrived, and it's time for the... my boot heels to be wandering. So let me thank you for being with me here. What about the sex, Dennis? Go to Community House and put on your clothes. That's the answer.
Well, I think that's pretty weird. I mean, don't most people in our community have sex?
Sex is a matter for you once you've gotten a steady job and kicked your drug habit and also, gotten over this problem of looking homeless.
Well, frankly, I think even homeless people can have sex, but not at community house, right?
That's a very radical position, and I think that you'll have to take that up with Karen Gillette. Tune in on Sunday for the next edition of Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norse, and Uncle Dennis will be with you shortly.
Was warm at night. He used to sing me lullabies, just like his father before him, always he.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the July 19th edition coming up. Bathrobes, Spears, Broadsides. Civil rights for the poor here in Santa Cruz. Homeless issues, police misconduct, and just community involvement. Stay tuned.
Roy Kong, Walter Ron, Tuscanini, Dan Kwan, Din Din, Pooh Falls, Rock Around the Clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn, Battle, Winning Team, Baby Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis, Billy, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Place, Cookie Place, Summer in the Sioux. We didn't start the fire, it was all we had, it was the world's desire. We didn't start the fire.
Start the Fire with Billy Joel, and he has been introducing our show for the last 3 months. This is Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and you're tuned to 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. We are free radio. We are unlicensed radio. We are radio that responds to the needs of the community in the absence of any significant, any meaningful and fair licensing scheme by the FCC, which currently has no way of licensing or has chosen not to license any stations under 100 watts. And those are thousands of us who are trying to, and in fact, even today as I speak, speaking from their own communities, essentially putting out information, having a dialogue with the community they're in, as should be the case with radio waves. They are public property, and that's how we intend to use them. However, free radio is under attack, as those of you who have been listening regularly know. Micro radio was effectively taken off the air in Berkeley by an injunction, and some stations have been frightened in other cities into pulling in their horns, at least for the time being.
Other stations are fighting back, as Steal This Radio, as Underground Radio calls itself in New York City, is doing. And we are fighting back. We are circulating a petition of support, seeking your assistance, and encourage you to give us a call at 427-4523. That's the free radio voicemail, 427-4523, and sign this petition supporting free radio in Santa Cruz, supporting the right of the community to have a radio station without paying $100,000, without having to sell crap on the air in order to finance itself. The right of the people, in essence, to engage in a dialogue, to use the airwaves as they should be used. There is also a call-in number for this show. We're going to be talking a lot about the struggles of homeless people in different cities, particularly San Diego, where police finally cracked down. They came in yesterday morning and began removing people's possessions, and they began telling them they couldn't sleep at night. Their protest continues in San Diego. There are 15 or 20 people in front of City Hall, even as I speak down there, telling the police to respect the rights that are guaranteed under the Constitution, to acknowledge the message that the homeless people of San Diego are sending out, that they do not have shelter, and that they are forced into an illegal, dangerous status by the city's laws and policies, and that simply harassing homeless people further, destroying their property, subverting their rights, simply removing them, making them unpersons, as George Orwell described happened in 1984, his famous totalitarian novel, is not the way to go. I'm going to be playing you an interview shortly with Roger Scott, who's a man from the streets who has been with the protest in San Diego for several months, has been in something of a leadership role. He's been arrested several times, not at the protest, but actually when he was away from the protest, picked off by the police. Never convicted of anything in San Diego that I'm aware of, and those cases are pending. And he's going to tell us and give us the update on what's going on in San Diego. San Diego also puts out a homeless newspaper called Street Light, which has been publishing for about a year and a half, 2 years. Really a good paper. I'm going to be hoping to read some articles from that later in the show. And before I forget, we have a couple of hopeful call-in guests, or I'm hopeful that they're going to call in. Hope, hope, hope. Sean Alini, or Shit Kicker Sean, as I call him, who's a Feed the People person. He has been feeding people on and off for the last 4 years, 3 years, here in Santa Cruz. He became notorious for feeding people at Cathcart and Pacific, or what was called Hippie Corner or Friendship Corner, before police and Parks and Rec and city agencies effectively destroyed that area as an area for youth and counterculture people to meet. Of course, they called it a drug dealing center, and certainly some of that went on, but it was also a center where crafts people met, where young people talked and conversed, and now, of course, it's the walled-off area, which is the site of the Swenson development down there at Cathcart and Pacific. But that is more or less where Sean is still feeding. He apparently now has resumed Feed the People, tells me on the phone today, and we're going to be hearing that interview later. And perhaps we'll be hearing from him directly that Feed the People feeds every Mondays and Tuesdays at 5:30 down there. So that means that Food Not Bombs, another worthy organization, feeds at the town clock at 4 o'clock on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and at 1 o'clock on Saturdays and Sundays. They'll be feeding today, Food Not Bombs will, down at the town clock. So for those who need to eat, and that's all of us, you can get healthy vegetarian food from Food Not Bombs, and you can get tasty food from Sean. I understand it's somewhat meager. It's sort of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or as he calls it, peanut butter, love, and jelly, as he insists. You can take the love or leave it, I guess, but Sean must have a lot of that because he's been doing this for some time. Sean also faces a court case coming up on July 31st in Department 1 at 1:30 in the afternoon, Judge Kelly's court. Very serious series of felonies. He's accused of drug use or drug sales to minors, and also sexual, either molesting or illegal statutory involvement with minors. in what has always seemed to me to be a trumped up case. They went after Sean for drugs 2 or 3 years ago when he was actually, yes, it was right after the City Hall sleepers protest. He was one of the original founders of the vigil with Dan Hopkins at the City Hall in Santa Cruz, a protest that lasted for 7.5 months that sought to bring the community's attention and the city's attention and the city council's attention to, of course, the infamous anti-homeless sleeping ban and covering up with blankets ban that still plagues our city, makes it illegal to sleep or to cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock every night. Anyway, Sean is going to court on these charges of, again, drugs and sexual misconduct, which, as I said, sound pretty flimsy to me. And it sounds all of a piece with some, perhaps, could it be police officers? Could it be city officials who don't want him doing his feeding operation downtown, who've taken a disliking to him? In any case, hopefully some of it will come out in court unless they see fit to drop it, which is apparently what Judge Kelly, the judge involved, may be seeking to get done. The rumor has it that he thinks this case is utterly flimsy and thinks it should never be brought up. But it's been on the hopper and actually has closed down Feed the People for the last 6-7 months. So it has had an impact on poor and hungry people in the community in Santa Cruz, those who've been relying on Feed the People, and of course those who rely to some extent on Sean's booming, friendly presence to stand up to bad police behavior. Because Sean isn't simply a polarized person. He calls himself, he says, "I'm not political," is what he always says. He's not an individual who simply criticizes the police. He's very friendly with many police officers. He tries to talk to all sectors of the community. And his absence on the mall for the last year, half year, has been, I think, had an impact on the kinds of behaviors we've seen from police officers harassing people. And in essence, following out the mandate of the city council, unfortunately, some of it is rogue officers like Officers Eboleth and Over, Officers LaFaver, who have been delighting in giving people tickets for leaning and sitting. And apparently, Officer Eboleth, by Sean's report, is now giving out bogus parking tickets to him before the meter has been expired, perhaps to prompt him into some kind of rage have him hauled in, because Sean is, with court proceedings pending in these other cases, is vulnerable. He's being offered probation. So far he's declined it, and I think a wise choice generally, because probation means if you try to do anything that police authorities want to close down, they can engage in what's called police contact with you, and that itself is an offense which violates your probation. And police contact, then you have to serve your whole term. So it really, if you accept probation, it puts you in a difficult spot. And hopefully we're going to hear about this from Sean Alimi. If not directly, then in a taped interview, which I have here. But first, let's hear a little bit from San Diego, from Roger Scott, who's been down there. He's really ragged. His voice is a kind of a rough, rugged, whiskey-voiced fellow. He's not drunk. He's very tired. He's been up for days with homeless people in San Diego, where there were, 4 days ago, 302 people in front of City Hall. Then 2 nights ago, 200 people. Last night, I think they dropped down to 20 people after police began stealing everybody's stuff. Actually, apparently took massive quantities of it. We're going to hear from Roger, his on-the-spot report. Sad situation, but again, they're continuing to fight and they're planning to go into court on Monday seeking injunctions against police behavior, though not with much legal support. Apparently, the kind of support they're getting is coming from within their own group. They don't have attorneys on call. The ACLU is not leaping into the fray. And again, that's generally the way it's always been. Here in Santa Cruz, we had a lot of trouble getting the ACLU involved. I don't think we ever got the ACLU to support ending the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz, even though we continued to ask them, and couldn't get Celia Scott and Catherine Byers to come out against the sleeping ban in terms of supporting the sleeping ban initiative. It was really kind of sad as far as I was concerned that city council members who know better don't have the courage to speak up on behalf of it. They had plenty of excuses. Oh, you know, it'll come to city council and then I won't be able to talk about it, which is preposterous. They can support it and talk about it. There's no justification for that kind of silence. But let's go down to San Diego and hear what's happening down there.
I don't know if you still have an encampment. You did, but police moved in yesterday morning, Saturday morning. What's happened down there?
They came in yesterday morning. There's about 200 of us sleeping. Mm-hmm. And they came in at 6 a.m. with a wake-up call and told the people that they had to pack up and leave. It wasn't about illegal encampment. It wasn't about us protesting. It was all the GOM storage.
Storage?
Storage.
Tell us about that.
Okay. They came in and said, it's fine to protest, and it's fine to be there, but you cannot have your belongings there. Mm-hmm. They call that illegal storage. However, there was about 30 of us that said, you know what, we're not going nowhere. Okay, the police then started saying that we had to pick our stuff up. We couldn't have nothing on the ground. Well, a lot of people had already gone to work, had gone out to see about jobs and everything else. And the police started saying, whose stuff is this? And my remark was, it's God's stuff, and I'm the keeper of it.
Uh-huh.
And the police said, all right, guys, take it. Every time they picked up a piece of property, I yelled at them, you're a thief, and you're stealing from the homeless.
Mm-hmm.